Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the Let's Ride podcast. Pete Poyon, joined by Matt Bocklet and head coach of Utah, Drew McMinn. Really excited about this interview. Drew is a Pittsburgh guy, spent most of his career at Rob Morris, but before that graduated from Mount Lebanon High School. I'll let Matt go through his bio before jumping into this thing, but I think one of the most unique stories and one of the most talented coaches out there. So we're really excited about having Drew on the podcast.
Yeah, very excited. Found the other Pittsburgh guy in lacrosse. We got Pete, didn't mention that he's a Pitt guy, but he is. Maybe he tries to hide that fact a little bit. But Coach McMinn, another proud Pittsburgh native, played at Providence College, where he was a three-time all-conference goalie, graduated in 2005, and then made it home and got hired at Robert Morris, or as we may call Bobby Moe on this podcast, and started his first season as an assistant in 2006. Was the assistant coach there for five seasons and then became the head coach. I believe that was 2012. So 10 years as the head coach at Bobby Moe, where he was the two-time NEC Conference Coach of the Year, was having some great seasons as of late, lots of accomplishments in terms of players. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but 12 players that went on to play in the NLL, which is the most of any college in the country. Now the head coach at Utah. So we have a lifelong Pittsburgh native who just spends a few years in college in Providence and now in Salt Lake City. So quite the transition there. Talk a little bit about your experience at Robert Morris. What brought you there right after school? Obviously spending 15 years in a city that you grew up in. So what, maybe 33 total years there. Can't be easy to leave home like that, but you obviously, you did a great job at Robert Morris, which led to you getting the job at Utah. So talk about your time at Robert Morris, what you learned working within that program, your 15 years of coaching there, and just the overall experience of your time.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. Starting off, just, when I was first there, I graduated from college. I actually looked into the English Lacrosse Association with just trying to figure out way of starting off a coaching career and kind of geared towards that for a little bit. And then, before fully committing to do it, I spoke with Bear Davis at the time, who was coaching at Robert Morris and started the program. And, he kind of said, hey, if you truly want to get into coaching, going this route and being able to get an opportunity in Division I programs can give you your best, best bet for the future. So, he's a pretty convincing guy and, convinced me that was the best choice to make at that time. And, they honestly at the time didn't have a paid position on staff beyond the head coach. There was, essentially just three volunteer roles. At the time it was just a paid head coaching position. So I hopped on it as a volunteer originally and, just kind of signed on in hopes of that position eventually advancing, which, in my second or third year, I believe my third, ended up becoming a graduate assistant. And, I was trying to still stick it out and see if I could make a living out of doing it. And then, that kind of at least bridged a gap where I was like, hey, I'll get a degree in the meantime and, see if the position could go full time from there. So I think it was probably my fifth year when the position went full time, and I spent about a year and a half as a full time assistant. And then Bear Davis had moved on, started coaching in the MLL and then took an athletic director position at Spalding. At Archbishop Spalding in Maryland. So when he had taken that position, I, went through the interview process and ended up being selected as the head coach to, to take over after Coach Davis there. So that was essentially the gist of it. And then, once becoming the head coach, as you mentioned, was there for 10 years until having this opportunity to come to Utah.
So I'm going to dig into that a little bit more. I'm being from Pittsburgh and being, graduating really from high school around the same time that Robert Morris program was starting, that program went from, and you saw it through from its the very beginning all the way to where it is now, which is a perennial NCAA tournament team. And you were winning the NEC, year over year towards the end there. And can you talk a little bit about, you grew up as a coach there really, from an assistant to head coach and just the reputation of that program being one that, hey, maybe consider Robert Morris to, hey, if you want to go play on one of the most high powered offenses in the country, then go to Robert Morris. And I know you were behind that from the very beginning. Talk about how that that process helped you grow up as a coach, and like, what were the biggest differences between the years where maybe you weren't finding the success and in some of those years that we coached against each other, to then like the last 4 or 5 years where you really, you know, you got to a place where culturally, you know, obviously you had your culture in place, the talent pipeline of the Canadians that, you know, and we'll dig into that a little bit more, but all things were ticking, you know, and going the right way for you. Like, what did you learn through that process, and how did that kind of unfold as you kind of grew up as a coach at Robert Morris?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Pete, I mean, you know, I was there from year two. So, you know, it started out with, you know, a lot of trial and error and, you know, figuring out kind of how not to do things. You know, we certainly took our bumps and bruises along the way in the first handful of years of the program. So, you know, it was almost just, you know, by trial and getting thrown into the fire in a lot of different situations and, you know, having things not work out for a while. You know, and continually going back to the drawing board. And, you know, we changed a lot of the things that we did on the field and a lot of the things that we did off the field as well, just from, you know, again, kind of learning in those first handful of years of starting a program. So I always kind of said with starting a program, I mean, every, you know, accomplishment and every, you know, every obstacle or every, you know, every wrong choice that you make or mistake that you make, I think is just magnified. Yeah, I mean, it's just a little bit more impactful, I think, when you're in like year two or year three of starting a program. So, you know, on that side of things, I think you just learn more. You know, with, again, a lot of it was learning from how not to do things when we kind of tried some things out early on and, you know, saw that it wasn't working. You know, and that was culturally, and then that was also on the field. And, you know, as far as the on the field stuff, mentioning like the offense, I mean, that's a perfect example of, you know, when we first started out, we were in the CAA conference. I mean, we were just getting it handed to us by Hofstra, by Towson, Drexel, Delaware, you know, when we were in year two, year three of our program. And, you know, we felt like athletically we just could not match up against those teams. And, you know, a lot of those games where, you know, the scores were certainly not working in our favor. And we found ourselves, you know, on the wrong end of the scoreboard with, you know, 4 or 5 total goals in a game and, you know, really kind of scratching our heads of how are we going to be able to compete with these teams. You know, one thing that we found, we were like, when we are actually having production, a lot of it's coming in the transition game. And I think that was where we kind of said, hey, I mean, maybe if we're not matching up, you know, in a 1v1 standpoint and, you know, in a settled field standpoint, you know, maybe we really look to just try to blow this transition thing out of the water. Since, you know, that's essentially the only way we were scoring, you know, and we really switched gears and started saying, hey, let's put our foot on the gas and, you know, see what we can do and, you know, trying to develop that style. And, you know, I think another big part of it too is just with starting a program and knowing that we had a lot of catching up to do with some of those programs that had been established for so long. And, you know, when we were first in the CAA, I mean, that was when Coach Janowski was at Hofstra, and I think they're ranked as high as like 2 in the country when we had played them back then. You know, so we really kind of just knew that we couldn't just go out and do things, you know, the way everybody else was doing them and expect to just find a way to be better than them. You know, so we really came from the standpoint of, hey, you know, a lot of it, you know, attributing this to Coach Davis as well with, you know, us sitting down and going to the drawing board together. But we just said, you know, what can we do to be different? You know, how can we kind of separate ourselves, you know, and have an approach that, you know, not many other teams have. And, you know, again, we kept getting back to just the transition game and the pace of play and, you know, trying to pride ourselves in the skill set and the development, you know, as opposed to just saying, you know, let's go out and try to get better athletes than, you know, again, a lot of those teams that have been, you know, history programs that have been doing things at a pretty high level long before us. So that certainly was a big part of just pushing us towards that style, you know, and we became a pretty offensive minded team and, you know, again, really try to just, you know, go with the run and gun style as much as we can and find ways of catching teams off guard. And, you know, so much of our offense was basically, you know, designed around how can we eliminate the athletic component? You know, how can we score in ways that, you know, we don't need to necessarily be bigger, stronger, faster, you know, and a lot of it just, you know, really started with when our defense is most vulnerable. Like if we can't beat them when things are evened up, you know, where can we find ways that we can try to take advantage of opposing defenses? And that was where we really tried to get creative of just, you know, manufacturing number scenarios and, you know, getting number advantages, even in the half field setting with a sub game or end line situations or, you know, things along those lines where, you know, we didn't have to depend on just running by somebody to, you know, to be able to play offense. And defensively, we kind of did the same thing. We said, you know, we're not necessarily going to, you know, keep teams off the board or keep them under 10 goals at times and match up athletically. But, you know, we really wanted to try to have a creative style where, you know, if we were going to be giving up goals, we wanted to still push the pace at that end of the field. And, you know, again, try to be aggressive with double teams and, you know, creating things on that end of the field that would also just feed into the style that we were trying to play offensively. So, again, a lot of it was when things weren't working out, just, you know, going back and saying, hey, well, if we can't do things in a, you know, traditional way and have success with it, you know, how can we look at things non-traditionally and kind of think outside the box as far as developing a different style than everyone else?
Yeah, well, certainly pain in the ass to deal with from an opposition standpoint. I saw that firsthand every year, every time we played, and we kind of made that same transition at Hobart, or tried to, and tried to play faster, and we had some track meets, and that was a lot of fun. Definitely a very fun way to play the game, and I would imagine it looks like on film that you guys are having a ton of fun out there at Utah, those guys adopting that style, or at least starting to. I do have a quick question. Something that I really respect and always have respected about you is that you've always been yourself, and it sounds simple, it sounds fundamental, but I think a lot of coaches fall into the trap of trying to be somebody that they're supposed to be as a coordinator, as a head coach, whatever it is. And, you know, from, you know, the day that I met you to now, all the success you've had, you've always been true to who you are. And I think your players, at least you hear that your players really like being around you. They really like being led by you. And I think that a lot of that is because of that fact. So in that growing up process of Robert Morris early in your career, did you ever find yourself being somebody that you felt like you were supposed to be as opposed to staying true to who you are? Maybe a pretty deep philosophical question, but I do think it's something that a lot of coaches kind of fall into. They feel like they need to fit this mold or act a certain way or teach and lead and coach a certain way. Is that anything that you ever struggled with?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, I think all coaches kind of go through, I mean, anybody in a leadership role, you know, as you kind of try to figure yourself out. And, you know, I certainly remember a turning point early on, you know, and even before I was a head coach, you know, where I really did feel myself. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head with what you're explaining there, Pete, where, you know, I found myself trying to be a certain way and, you know, act a certain way. And, you know, real, as I think a lot of us do as we get into our coaching careers, you know, I went off of what I knew as a player, you know, so I think I really tried to, you know, force the square peg into a round hole with, you know, doing things the way that, you know, my coaches did things when I was in college, you know, and really didn't, like, eventually just got to the point where I didn't feel like I was being myself. So I think another area where, you know, learned the hard way of, you know, trying to be a certain way and realizing, hey, this isn't really working. And you know, I do remember like a distinct turning point and, you know, a book that I was reading at the time, that was a John Wooden book, you know, where he really hit on that being one of the most important things that you can do as a leader is just truly be yourself, because eventually people are going to start seeing through it if you're not. And, you know, it just, you know, kind of hit me in the face at the time where I was like, you know, this message is, you know, one that I need to really adhere to, because I did feel at the time like I had tried to force, you know, a style and a personality and, you know, being a certain way that I just thought you were supposed to be, you know, and when I read that at the time, I was just like, yeah, I mean, this is, I'm going wrong in a lot of ways here. You know, and just really try to make the, like, once you make the effort to do it, I think, you know, for all of us, we can relate to it. Like when you settle in and realize like, hey, just actually, you know, have to be conscious of, you know, just being who I am and, you know, not trying to be something above or beyond or act a different way or, you know, fake a personality. And I, you know, just realized then, you know, for the better, for the worse, I was like, just have to kind of make an adjustment and, you know, not force anything. And just, you know, as you said, just try to be exactly who you are and, you know, have the guys realize that, you know, you're going to be genuine, you're going to be authentic and, you know, going to try to be honest with them at all times and, you know, be as true to you as you possibly can.
And I think that transitions nicely as we start talking about Utah and your current season right now, having a strong start, 3-3 with a top 20 win over Vermont, a top 10, the first in program history over Jacksonville. But more importantly, having to now move cities and start with a program that is still very new with a group of guys that you didn't know until, right, till probably the start of fall ball, and transitioning there. If you showed up in Salt Lake City and tried to, like you said, stick a square peg in a round hole and run the same exact systems that you did with your roster at Robert Morris, with a Utah team with different personnel, I think your results right now would be a lot different. So talk about how you've had to adjust maybe some of the things that you like to do as a coach to make sure that your team and what they were built for is seeing some of that success. And probably most notably, when I look at your Robert Morris rosters that had 10 plus Canadians on every single team. Now you're at Utah, where one cool thing I saw was that you have 18 US states represented among your roster, which has to be one of the highest of any team in Division I lacrosse, but more importantly, only one Canadian. So for you, that's got to be a little bit of a change in the things that you've liked to do in the past. So talk about what that transition's been like and how you've managed to maybe learn your new squad, but also some of the things that you need to be doing to make sure that your team is finding success on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great question. And, you know, for me, I mean, I came in and really just tried to have kind of a, you know, a blank slate, you know, as far as what our approach was going to be. I wanted to learn it as we went, and, you know, was fortunate to get here, you know, for the start of fall ball. A lot of people kept talking about the timing being, you know, not ideal because it was the end of summer and got thrown in right at the start of the fall. But in the grand scheme of things, I was like, we have the entire fall to work with. We have our, you know, our off season, we have our preseason. So, you know, I knew we were going to have, you know, 6 months together before actually having to get into outside competition. You know, so by no means was it not ideal with the timing. I mean, we had, you know, the ability to go through that entire fall season and preseason. And, you know, I did come in and, you know, really just do a lot of evaluating. I told the guys right off the bat that, you know, for me in the first few weeks, and, you know, I came in without, you know, a staff fully in place. I had Coach McDermott, who, you know, was the director of ops previously, but, you know, immediately, you know, had him on the field with me. You know, and it was just the two of us to start as I was kind of slowly putting the staff together. So, you know, I let the guys know we were going to let them play a lot early on, you know, and that they weren't going to hear necessarily a ton of direction or, you know, much from us as far as, you know, trying to enforce a style of play or, you know, exactly what we were looking for. We wanted to learn from them as much as, you know, we wanted them to learn from us. So, we did a lot of scrimmaging early on and then just, you know, introduced some of the, I, you know, got on page with Coach McDermott with drills that they had done in the past, and, you know, implemented some of the drills that I've used in the past that, you know, that were ones that we always fell back on, and, you know, really just sat back and evaluated and tried to figure out, you know, what the identity was before we, you know, before we forced anything upon them. So, and with that, a big one that I let the guys know early on is, you know, to play an up-tempo style and, you know, run the transition game like we figured we could still be able to do. You know, we felt like we still had to just emphasize the skill set, you know, as much as we possibly could. So, you know, still put in a ton of time early on with just, you know, trying to develop our shooting, our stick work, our ball movement. And, you know, that's at both ends of the field, of course. And, you know, again, we learned, you know, through time there throughout the fall that we had guys that were certainly capable of playing the style, you know, that we had implemented at Robert Morris. So there's differences without question. And we've had, you know, we changed up our 6v6 offense a little bit from, you know, from what we had done at Robert Morris, and, you know, really tried to suit it more to our personnel, but, you know, stuck with the run and gun approach and, you know, continually, you know, tried to develop that more and more as we've gone throughout the year here. So, but yeah, long story short, it was a lot of kind of feeling them out and, you know, learning from them and evaluating exactly who we were as a team before we were going to try to force anything and, you know, make them be something that they weren't. But, you know, I think in the end, it ended up working out pretty well where, you know, we were able to kind of meet in the middle on a lot of things with, you know, us adjusting to them as players, but, you know, getting them as much on board with, you know, with how we want to continue to do things moving forward. So.
Yeah. And I like that approach a lot. I was listening. Denver's all excited because we just signed Russell Wilson to join the Denver Broncos. And he had mentioned in the week after his signing that he had watched every Broncos regular season game at least 2 to 3 times. So when you're going into a new program with that mindset, are you watching films from Utah from the season before? Are you looking at player stats? Or are you just going blank sheet? I'm just going to show up day one, roll the ball out with some drills and really just evaluate these guys? Or do you want to have an understanding of who's coming back and maybe what are some of the things that looked like they had success with on film?
Yeah, I definitely got into some film right away, and it helped that, you know, their last game of the season last year was against us. So we, you know, we had the scouting report that was still pretty fresh in our minds, and, you know, had a pretty good understanding of their style of play and what they were doing, you know, at the end of last year. So, you know, had that full base to go off of. But, you know, I for me, Matt, I really tried to make sure that I was watching film more so to just see the overall team identity, and not form any, you know, early biases or opinions on personnel. Just because, again, we felt like coming in, I mean, it was only fair to, you know, to really have a completely open mind, you know, to evaluate everybody. And we really tried to make sure that we were doing that on an individual level. But, you know, I did spend a lot of time just watching their film from last year and, you know, just more so looking at stylistically what they were doing on both sides of the ball. And then, you know, on the personnel side, like I said, more so trying not to be too quick to judge anything there, as we knew we just had a lot of time to evaluate them, you know, on our own as we moved into the fall there.
Who won that game?
We at Robert Morris, we won. So
do you say we when you say Robert Morris?
No, I mean, I said at Robert Morris, we won. Yeah. So it's no longer the case now. So no, I made sure to switch gears to using we for Utah immediately.
And that's awesome. So talk a little bit about your philosophy. Like, you're responsible for, you know, dozens and dozens of, probably more than any other college coach, I would imagine, sending guys to the NLL, partly because, you know, a lot of Canadians playing that indoor game growing up that way. But, you know, coming to the previous institution and you developing them in that regard, and MLL players and now PLL players. So that's a pretty cool thing. But talk about the philosophically and systematically, like, I always felt like with the amount of Canadians you had, there wasn't necessarily, like, the natural inclination is to say a bunch of Canadians, you're going to run a lot of two-man games. I never felt like you guys did a ton of two-man stuff. You utilized that Canadian skill set in such a unique way. I felt like the spacing was always very impressive. You guys always had great spacing. You always had great ball movement. And I don't know if it was a byproduct of all the numbers or transition drills that you do as a head coach, but your players always seem to be able to take advantage of a rotation, especially an adjacent rotation. So what do you attribute that to? And then can you build on that and talk about the substitution stuff? I mean, every week, I'm sure people are preparing for it, but the substitution game, knowing like you're going to give up 5 yards to Coach McMinn's team, and you're going to try your best not to, but you're going to do it. So you better be prepared for that number scenario coming back the other way. And you know, I got used to giving up 1 or 2 goals a game that way. From an outsider's perspective, somebody that didn't spend a ton of time on that phase of the game, but always loved getting a numbers situation, but then always tightening up and saying like, oh, well, it's kind of a hit or miss. It's a little bit of a home run play. If you know, you try to make the big play in that numbers scenario and it doesn't work out, and now it's coming back the other way. You really have to be honed in on being an aggressive, but being smart. And so can you talk about your philosophies when it comes to Canadians and, you know, all the things that you did from a spacing, from a number scenario, and then that substitution game? Like, how do you build that into your program? And is that something, not is it, but how's that going so far at Utah? Because I've seen a little bit of it already this season.
Yeah, I mean, you're completely right, Pete. I mean, I think a lot of people always said, you know, because we had so many Canadians, people would just always say that we were running a lot of two-man game. And to your point, we really weren't. You know, for us, I mean, I always joked as a Canadians are actually terrible in the two-man game in the field because they're used to being able to cross-check people out of the way and then just roll right out of it. And, you know, their fundamentals, and but like a lot of times they turn the wrong way, they turn their head to the ball, you know, they look away from the play because they are used to just being able to, you know, being able to use their physicality to create their own space. So, joking aside, but I went to our guys, I'm like, man, I thought you guys are going to be great two-man guys, but you know, once you put the field rules in place, they kind of, you know, are scratching their head on how they're supposed to then, you know, get open. And
I never even thought of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, we would go, you know, days at a time where we'd literally just have to, you know, put things in place for, you know, for some sort of consequence for guys just having, you know, moving picks, throwing the little cross check to the hip and, you know, doing the things that they're just used to doing, you know, not even to their fault. They just grow up playing that way in box. So, you know, and we even had a couple guys over the years that had never played field lacrosse. They're literally like, what are you talking about? Why is this illegal? You know, like, why does it matter if I hardly even bumped them? And it's like, no, it doesn't work that way in the field. Like, you cannot lean your shoulder and just throw it into a guy and roll off of them. It's, you know, it's going to get called every time. So, to your point, you're probably one of the only ones that realized we didn't run a lot of two-man game. But a lot of it for us is more like you said. I mean, it's creating those number advantages and trying to get perimeter rotations. You know, we kind of start out with the basis of everything that we teach on the offensive side of the ball, you know, with the 2-on-1, you know, and then building up from there. So, you know, a lot of it just starts with our basic fundamentals on, you know, how to perform in 2-on-1 situations. And, you know, we you know, start out with, you know, with larger numbers, of course, in the scenarios when we're running transition. But, you know, we really talk about trying to reduce numbers, you know, from those 6v5s or 5v4s or 4v3s, you know, down to that last 2-on-1. And, you know, you do that, of course, by ball movement. You know, so for us, I mean, you know, we attack very aggressively at any number advantage we can. And to your point, like with the subbing game, even if it's just be a 5-yard jump, you know, like if we're going to have that, we want to at least see if we can force a rotation. You know, so whether it's the subbing game, whether it's the transition game and, you know, getting the number advantages in those scenarios or, you know, again, even, you know, when we are playing in 6v6, as you said, you know, we're trying to, even with teams that are siding heavily from the crease, we'll try to get them to step up adjacently and compromise themselves. You know, and a lot of it we'll do kind of predetermined where we'll dodge and roll back. Like we try to make teams double us, you know, even if it's not within their side package, but more the doubling, you know, as opposed to just siding from the inside. But, you know, we try to be prepared for that. And then again, start the rotation. And, you know, really a lot of our offense just becomes the exact same principles, you know, once you get to that point. You know, whether it is the transition game or whether it is the subbing or, you know, forcing a, you know, a perimeter slide, you know, a lot of it just gets us into that next element of just, okay, now that we have, you know, the number advantage, you know, how do we execute from there? So, you know, a lot of it is, it's just trying to create those number scenarios. And again, like I said, a lot of it, we even do in 6v6 where we're trying to force those perimeter rotations, or that's where we'll use the two-man game a little bit more. It's just on the perimeter, trying to more so, you know, we have perimeter rules where, you know, that you mentioned the spacing, a lot of it's just, you know, we have concepts in place with giving each guy like basically three options of where to move as the ball moves towards them, you know, and ideally, and then we have rules with our spacing off ball. But, you know, the two-man game that we utilize on the perimeter, it is just trying to get two guys to jump as opposed to, you know, necessarily getting that inside side from the crease. And then again, once we get that jump, we get two people to play ball or two people to jump to the off ball guy, you know, we're right back to that same scenario of just getting a number advantage and playing it out from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's so painful to watch and try to come up with a game plan against it because it's so simple. It's such simple concepts, but it's so disciplined in the way that you guys put it all together, which makes it extremely tough, and it's constant. It's, you know, through the substitution, it's through the transition phase and through the substitution. And then you feel like you're, you know, getting settled. And then there's one guy that makes one kind of undisciplined error. And like, it's like a jailbreak. And specifically when you had, you know, the Canadians or Robert Morris and, you know, like I said, I've seen clips at Utah already. I'm sure it's just going to continue to get better and better. But, you know, if you're a young player and looking for a fun brand of lacrosse to play, I can't imagine a better place to go and a better system to really buy into, because it doesn't get more fun than that. They clearly have freedom and there's a ton of discipline surrounding the freedom that they have. It's very clear that you instill that, but you know, as a 35 year old, I'm jealous of those Utah guys running around and playing a fast brand, fun brand of lacrosse. So it's definitely something to consider for these young recruits out there.
And the,
yeah,
and
no,
the
continue, I appreciate that.
And to continue with the recruiting, we do like to, you know, ask coaches their philosophies, what they're doing, what players can be doing. Your situation at Utah, a little bit different, right? August 24th, 2021 will go down as probably one of the more important days in your professional career, being hired at Utah on that day. But probably a little more importantly, it's only a week away from what is arguably one of the more important days in the young careers of the 2023 class, the current juniors in high school right now. So you get hired to Utah a week before you can start calling players in that junior class. It's the dead period in the summer. You're done with your recruiting and now you're at a new school. What did that look like for you? All of a sudden you're preparing for all these phone calls you're about to make and guys you want to recruit to Robert Morris. And now I would assume you had to take that same list of players and you're just making the phone call now from a different school that you're going to have to sell when you probably, maybe you're on campus for a couple days for interviewing. Maybe you just moved in, started looking at homes with your family. You're trying to do a million things. And one of the most important ones on the top of that list is recruiting the 2023 class. So what did that week look like, which I would have to imagine was filled with some excitement, some stress. And now, did you take the same list of kids and just bring that over to Utah? Did you start going after some players that maybe you didn't think you could make the call to, or you could make the call and you just didn't think maybe they'd be that interested? So, I mean, I'd have to imagine that was one of the craziest weeks of your entire life. but trying to recruit these kids now to a completely different school, you know, how did that look?
Yeah, no, and you're exactly right on a lot of those points, Matt. I mean, yeah, we did, you know, go off of the same list that we had for Robert Morris. I had Coach Doyle that was our defensive coordinator there, who by that point had signed on and, you know, realized that he was going to be making the move with me. So, you know, the two of us went off of the list that we had and then got Coach McDermott on board. And, you know, he had some of the guys that they had from their recruiting list, you know, compiled everything and put it all together. But, you know, we never by any means, you know, felt like we couldn't go after top kids. I was at Robert Morris. We still tried whether we were going to get them or not. You know, so it wasn't like we felt like, and we knew coming to Utah, you know, hey, we have a much bigger national brand that we can now offer than, you know, what I was used to in the past. So, you know, we still went off the same list, but, you know, we were, you know, pretty excited and anticipating that we were probably going to get a little bit higher rate of response than we were used to with, you know, going after those top kids. And, you know, came to find out pretty quickly that was the case. And I had already flown back and forth twice, just with coming out here, meeting the team, going back home with my family, and then actually had my ticket booked the morning of September 1st to come back out to Utah. So I started out the day with, you know, all text messages on the plane without being able to make any calls that morning. So I sent out probably I think I texted like 160 kids from, you know, the two flights that I had to get from Pittsburgh to Salt Lake on the first. So, you know, sent out all text messages and set up phone calls. And then as soon as I arrived, I was immediately on the horn just with, you know, with following up with everybody that had texted with me and, you know, started actually connecting with them over the phone there, and then spent the night in the hotel, you know, just continuing those calls. So, and then Coach McDermott and Coach Doyle were able to, you know, to take a big part of the load too, you know, and they were able to obviously call kids directly, you know, first thing, because it's always, you know, we always feel it's important to actually get on the horn with those kids and, you know, not just text. They connected with, you know, a pretty big group of, you know, who we had on our original list. And, you know, from there, just obviously, you know, we were overwhelmed. I mean, as you said, there's a lot of excitement behind it. And, you know, for me personally, I mean, at Robert Morris, I was used to, you know, a much lower rate of return on our communication and, you know, just the overall interest level where, you know, quite honestly, just right off the bat, you know, I was blown away by some kids that in the past I did kind of say, yeah, well, you know, we'll call them, we'll text them, but there's a good chance we're not going to hear anything back, where, you know, we were getting a lot of those return, you know, correspondences from kids that we're now reaching out to just, you know, by saying Utah and just hearing the excitement and, you know, a lot of the kids that just knew a lot about the program and the area, and, you know, to the previous staff's credit, you know, just, you know, what they had established and, you know, creating a brand already. So, you know, a lot of kids just had, I mean, there was just a ton of buzz and it was just awesome. On day one, to first, you know, make the attempt to, you know, to start getting our outreach and, you know, trying to grow our program just to see how many people were just interested right off the bat on September 1st there.
Well, one, you got to be thrilled that you're now flying out of Salt Lake City and you'll get a lot more direct flights than that Pittsburgh airport. But with that, you've mentioned Coach McDermott a bunch, and I've known Tim almost my whole life. Our parents actually grew up together, and I know he was the director of ops before you got there, and he had a lot to do with handling the incoming recruits in the team while Utah was still searching for a head coach. I know personally just from him recruiting players out of Colorado that he's big on the mental side of the recruiting process. So one, I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that approach and understanding players, both obviously what you're seeing on the field, but mentally how you approach evaluating them. But two, I'd be interested to know if when you guys compared your recruiting notes, if you had any players that were on both your lists.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of good questions there. I mean, and hitting on, you know, Coach McDermott, just bridging that gap. I mean, he was kind of running the ship, you know, by himself in the interim. And, you know, he was extremely instrumental, you know, in just helping me with the adjustment. I mean, not only with the guys, but, you know, just, you know, connecting me on with people on campus, and, you know, helping me just understand exactly how things were done in the past. And, you know, having the list of, you know, who their recruits were, who their incoming, like there was just so many things that I had to figure out in a very short period of time. And, you know, who are commitments that we're about to sign in November, which wasn't too far away at that point. And, you know, who were the guys that were, you know, in communication with that hadn't committed. And, you know, then again, the 23s with, you know, recruiting that class specifically and, you know, seeing kind of what list they left behind with the previous staff. And, you know, to the question of, you know, having guys that were on both lists, we absolutely did. You know, and again, it was just reassuring. I mean, when you're recruiting, obviously every time you get a second eyes on, you know, second set of eyes on somebody that, you know, feels the same way, whether it's your own staff or another staff, it just gives you that extra reassurance there. So certainly just helped to know that there was guys that, you know, the program had already been recruiting or at least had on their board, you know, that we felt very strongly about as well. So and then, yeah, on the mindset side, I mean, you know, Tim's awesome with that stuff. I mean, he puts so much into it. I mean, I've always been so big into the mental game. And we really started priding ourselves a lot in Robert Morris and, you know, really trying to evaluate who we were getting as people, where that was another one that, you know, certainly learned doing things the wrong way early on, where we were, you know, kind of feeling desperate in the first few years, where it was like, we'll take anybody and everybody if they're talented. You know, and we had kids that, you know, through a backstory or through a coach telling us something that, you know, wasn't a positive report, you know, or academics or, you know, different things that, you know, that were certainly red flags that, you know, we just kind of said, hey, we're in a position where we need to sometimes compromise that stuff and bring the kid in anyway. And, you know, I think Pete, you'd probably attest to it through college recruiting. I mean, 9 times out of 10, you just realize it's not worth it, you know, and yeah. There's not really enough talent in any kid that can, you know, that can overcome, you know, something that he's going to bring negatively to your culture or, you know, to the overall just, you know, mentality of the team. So, you know, we really tried to switch gears and feeling like we didn't have a great culture at the time, you know, and said, hey, let's only bring kids to campus if we're sold 100% on the lacrosse side of things. So got a lot more selective, you know, and who we were bringing, you know, and offering visits to. And then the decision solely came down to who we felt most comfortable with on a personal level, you know, and we had certain, you know, I always said I wanted to find out an exact system of, you know, kind of like an interviewing process of exactly what questions to ask kids, but, you know, never really got to the point where we had like a set approach, but at the same time, just, you know, said overall, we really want to try to evaluate the personal side and, you know, what kind of drive they have, what kind of passion they have, you know, what kind of belief they have to be the best player in the country or to be, you know, to help us be the best team in the country and to believe that that was possible. And, you know, we also just, you know, switched gears into not making any decisions until guys, but we were able to do overnight visits unofficially at Robert Morris just because they didn't have the NCAA rule where, if, you know, the dorms don't charge typically to have somebody there, then you're allowed to have a recruit stay, you know, unofficially. So we started doing our visits where, you know, we would have the guys that, you know, spend basically the recruits spend all the time with the team And then would meet with them after the fact. And, you know, we would tell them, you know, afterwards that, hey, we're going to go to our guys and, you know, get their opinion and see what they felt about you and if you're going to fit in with our culture. And, you know, we would do meetings with our guys a couple times a year and just remind them of what we were looking for and, you know, told them how much we wanted them to own the process with us and, you know, that we valued their opinion and that we wanted to hear the feedback of what kids were like after they left the office. Because, you know, on a recruiting visit, as you guys know, you know, an hour or two with the coach, you're not really showing much of your true colors. You know, so we would get a lot of the feedback from the guys. And, you know, that was something that, I mean, you know, we really found was starting to pay off and pay dividends with just feeling like we were getting really good people that we felt strongly about just on a personal level. And, you know, coming here with Tim, I mean, you know, everything that he's done from, you know, he helped out a lot behind the scenes with just doing the mindset stuff and, you know, kind of trying to gauge that stuff, which, you know, we found has been awesome and the recruiting since I've been here. You know, and it just shows kids, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, Matt. I mean, it's the riser mindset, you know, system that we've used. And, you know, it just gets a read on kids and just kind of shows them of, hey, we care about who you are as a person. You know, we want to see kind of what this personality test turns out to be. We don't do it with everybody. But, you know, a lot of kids, you just say, hey, there's probably a need to just see where they're at. Or a lot of times, you know, as we made the decisions for the 23 class, you know, if we're down to two or three guys that we couldn't really differentiate between, you know, that was something that we've used just to, you know, to try to set, you know, be one more separating factor. So I've always been, you know, again, so invested in the mental side of the game. I think being a goalie, that's natural. But meeting Tim, I'm pretty shocked to see that I think he even puts more into it than I ever have. You know, but it's awesome because I love that side of things. I mean, I'd much rather be around, you know, guys that you know, put a lot of value into that as opposed to the other end where, again, you know, there's coaches that, you know, do what we did, you know, back when we did start our program, like I said, we were just saying, hey, as long as they're talented and they're going to fit in with our system, we'll make it work. You know, and then they get there and you're like, we can't make this work. So, you know, just putting more time into that and then having Tim be somebody that just puts so much value into that has been awesome because I think we just click, you know, with our mindset overall with, you know, the importance of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty fascinating. And I did see that firsthand. I think as you and I became closer and we're coaching against each other, you know, I know how important that culture piece has been to you and will continue to be to you. And I think once you realize that you can't change a kid fundamentally, you know, you can help them evolve, you can help them grow. But you can't cure a culture killer. Like, you know, you see your team will start to take on the personality of the head coach. And that's the greatest compliment I can give to you or anybody, any other leader, I think is when we were playing you in some of those really tight games, you guys were unfazed by anything that would happen. We'd go up and there was no negative emotion. The body language was always very positive. And you just knew you were never like going to pull away. And you know, in a close game and overtime, you guys were always capable of making those big time plays. So I can't wait to see that, you know, come to fruition at Utah. Seems like it already has to some extent, but I'm also a little bit terrified for some of these other coaches. If you're starting to get the callbacks at a higher rate now than you were Robert Morris. I mean, some of those guys you had at Robert Morris were extremely talented. And, you know, I always felt like, you know, you and I were at some of these non-main events kind of lurking in the shadows, trying to find these diamonds in the rough. And you were always very successful at it. So I look forward to seeing you get some big time recruits and some athletes there as well. Switching gears though, I'm interested, you know, you're a Yinzer when it comes down to it. You know, the call, and you alluded to some of this stuff before the interview started, but talk to us about, you know, culturally going from being a Pittsburgh guy, you know, they ain't serving Permane Brothers sandwiches out there in Utah. So talk to us a little bit about the culturally kind of what that's been like, that big shift that you're in a completely different part of the country. How's that been for you and your family?
Yeah, again, as I mentioned before, I mean, just pace of life and just, you know, kind of overall just the type of people that, you know, that you run into in Salt Lake. I mean, I think it's a very similar vibe as Pittsburgh, which, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, that was one of the things with obviously coming across the country and going to a different place. I mean, you know, you can make anything work, especially as you know, once you have kids and everything. I mean, most of your time spent at home in the house and with the family anyway. So it's not like I was worried about the social life or what was offered on that end of things, but more just, you know, the interactions that, you know, that affect all of us on a day-to-day basis with who you're surrounded by and what type of people you run into every day. So, that's just been extremely positive. Cause again, I mean, we just felt like it's a very similar pace of life and, you know, another place where, you know, you feel like people hold a door open for you and go out of their way to say hello to you and interact with you. And, you know, it just seems like there's a very genuine kind of down to earth feel from the people here. And, you know, I said, I'm obviously biased from Pittsburgh, but when I was at Robert Morris, I mean, that was one of the things that we would have as a quote unquote selling point. But, you know, we always talked about just, you know, again, having good people in our program, but just said that we felt like at the university and the surrounding area, you know, you just recognize that there's just good people that are around you. And, you know, coming here, I mean, it was very evident right away that, you know, like I said, it's just a very similar feel and similar vibe.
That's awesome.
And for the rest of us out there, I just looked up Yinzer, and that's a person, an inhabitant of Pittsburgh. So I didn't know that. I don't know if I was supposed to know that. I'm sure most people listening didn't understand that term. So we got that one out there. That's these two guys on here. I'm on this podcast with a couple Yinzers. And to kind of wrap things up, Coach, you signed up to be at Utah, which is now in the A-Sun, the same conference as Bobby Moe. So you signed up to play against the squad you coached for 15 years, and you have them coming out to Salt Lake City in 3 weeks. So kind of describe what the emotion and what that's going to feel like. You're going to be coaching against a team that you recruited all of those players and coached the majority of them for 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'll quote Coach Starzer with this one with the no big games, but, it's definitely a different element, you know, with that being the place where I spent so much of my career. But, you know, to Pete's point, I mean, I certainly, you know, take a lot of pride in what you said, Pete, that in a lot of situations, you know, we try to just always have a very similar style of play and, you know, not let the moment affect us. And, you know, that's a big, big thing for me philosophically that we really push across is, you know, every week there's inconsistencies that, you know, are basically to me just, you know, potential distractions to pull us off our path. And that could be, you know, who we're playing or where we're playing or, you know, what type of travel we had, or did we just get ranked, or did we just get knocked out of the rankings, or, you know, is it a tie game and it's overtime, or the first quarter, whatever it is. I mean, there's inconsistencies that every team deals with every single week. And, you know, I'm just big on the philosophy of just, you know, trying to focus on the things that are consistent, you know, and we always talk about at the end of the day, we're just trying to put that little white ball in the back of the net more than the other team can. So simplifying that stuff as much as we can. And, you know, again, that goes into, you know, how we perform within different moments within one game, you know, and not letting the situation within a game affect us, but also just, you know, how we approach every single game that we play that, you know, we don't want to treat any different opponent, you know, any opponent differently or any situation differently. So that will probably, I'd have to say that one will be the biggest challenge for me to stay the course, just because, you know, there's, you know, more so just a lot of, you know, for me, just, you know, the love of all those guys that I coached, you know, I mean, that was the hardest thing. I mean, you know, when I left Robert Morris, I mean, you know, there was so much excitement to come to a place like Utah and seeing what the university and, you know, the surrounding area had to offer. But, you know, the one thing that was just, you know, the toughest without question, even with, you know, leaving a lot of friends and family in the area, I hope they're not listening to this to hear me say this, but, you know, it might have been just as tough, if not tougher, just leaving those guys that, you know, that I had recruited to come to Robert Morris and coach for that entire time. So, you know, they'll be the, you know, the added element of just, you know, playing against guys that I love, where I normally try to find ways to really not like the opponent in any way whatsoever. you know, so that will be a little bit different than usual, but, you know, I'll certainly do my best and make sure that the team has the approach that, you know, it's another game of 60 minutes of lacrosse that we're going to try to be at our best regardless of the situation.
I think maybe a tougher game for Coach Jimmy Perkins that what has he been flip-flopping between Robert Morris and Utah for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, just telling him to not mix up his sweatshirts that weekend.
I just keep telling him to make sure that he tells everybody he's following me and I'm not following him. So, but no, he's had a wild ride of playing for us for 4 years there and then 2 years at Utah and then back to a seventh year at Robert Morris. And then, you know, once we were out here, he had actually lived in Pittsburgh beyond, you know, finishing up with us last year. And then, you know, gave me the call that he was coming out. We were kind of in, you know, in the works of trying to figure out our volunteer situation. And, you know, he was on a, you know, West Coast job working remotely. So with our practice timing for the spring, it lined up. He was like, hey, I can kind of hit my full-time job and be able to be at practice. And, you know, he's passionate about the game, of course. And, you know, he has gone above and beyond anything we could have asked for because, you know, we signed him on to kind of just come on and be more of a practice coach and a volunteer in that capacity. But, you know, he finds a way to just give extra to us as a staff and to the program in every way that he can, even outside of working a full-time job. So, yeah, he's definitely following me. I'm not following him.
How about Coach Doyle? I mean, I know he played for you, Robert Morris, and then he was the Warrior who followed you over to Utah from Robert Morris. So he was a player for you and coach with you. And now he's back or continued on your staff at Utah. What's his presence been like?
Yeah, I mean, everything that I could ask for again. I mean, I just feel extremely fortunate with the staff that, you know, that we were able to put together. And I think we kind of hit, you know, I had a plan going in of, you know, wanting to have somebody that, you know, came from our culture and understood how I had done things in the past. And that was Coach Doyle. You know, I didn't even take a breath before telling him that if he wanted the job, he was with me. You know, and just a testament to who he is as a person. I mean, you know, not even speaking to his coaching ability, but just, you know, an incredible human being. And I absolutely loved coaching him as a player and, you know, told him when he was looking to get into coaching beyond his playing career that, you know, I felt like he needed to go off and, you know, get an experience with another program and another coach. And I said, there's a good chance I'll probably at some point sooner than later ask you to come back. And I don't want to tell Coach Berzner that because he was with him at VMI and that was the job that he took. But you know, after two seasons, you know, ended up offering him to come back to Robert Morris when he had the position available. And, you know, when he came back, he was on staff with me in 2020 and then 21. And then, you know, again, when this opened up, I mean, just with who he's always been, I mean, you know, I just, you know, couldn't say enough positive things about who he is as a person and, you know, his family. I mean, just absolutely love him and his family to death and, you know, knew he was, you know, going to be the perfect fit for the job if he was willing to do it. And, you know, lucky for me, he was, you know, just about as quick in answering me as I was in asking him. And he said, yeah, amen. You know, and he said, let's do this. So, and he had some experience with him being, you know, close with Coach Perkins when they played together. You know, he had come out to Utah a couple of times, so he was at least familiar with it. So didn't feel like he was necessarily jumping into something that he had, you know, no, it wasn't completely blind for him. So he knew, you know, he had been to Salt Lake before and had some experiences here. So yeah, he was, you know, the first piece of the puzzle to just know that I had somebody that, you know, was going to fully understand our culture. And again, just knowing who he was as a person and how capable he was to help us grow as a program. And then, you know, Coach McDermott, again, he was the perfect fit for just bridging, you know, bridging the gap. And Matt, as you know, I mean, just an incredible person as well. And, you know, he, you know, had done such a tremendous job of everything that he did behind the scenes here. But, you know, I certainly, you know, it became very evident right away that he was more than capable of being on the field and having that role as well. And, you know, he's been awesome with our special teams units and our face-off guys and our riding and clearing. And, you know, he's really dove into that side of the game as much as he can beyond just his face-off experience. And, you know, another piece of the puzzle that I just felt like was the perfect fit to still connect with the, you know, the history and the traditions of the program, you know, where I could connect with him and know exactly kind of how things had been done in the past.
Yeah, it sounds like a great staff to play for, you know, and I will add another anecdote. I think it speaks to your character and your leadership. I know it won't be the first time you've seen the Robert Morris family since departing, going back to the alumni game. Jack Toom, who tragically passed away, was a Warrior on the field, a really competitive guy that I got a chance to coach against and write about in the scouting report. But I know you got an opportunity to go back and honor him and see the guys. So I just think that's really cool that you didn't allow or you carved out time in the midst of this crazy part of your life and your crazy part of your career to go back and honor him and see those guys. So just a really cool thing. And I don't think that there's been a ton of media publicity on you as a coach. I still think, you know, this interview does not do your path justice, your coaching ability justice. I mean, I know that your results speak for themselves, but I just have so much respect for what you've done in this sport and building that Robert Morris program up, and, you know, really excited for you and your family to be out in Utah and having the success that you already do. I think you're just scratching the surface. I think you know that, but thanks a lot for coming on this podcast with us, and can't wait to see your vision for this program come to fruition. I can see it being a program that's playing in Final Fours and competing for national championships before too long. So I wish you well. And thanks again for stopping on for us.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate all that. And thank you guys for having me. I've been listening to your previous podcast. So honored to be a part of it and get asked to be a part of it. And thank you guys for having me on.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.